my king is. I've noticed something, excuse me, very disturbing of late that maybe many of you can appreciate. I've discovered that the more I seem to, that I know about something or understand about life, the more I realize that I just simply don't understand. Case in point is a public service announcement I stumbled across that addresses the serious problems that arise in the resumes of clergy seeking placement in churches. So as a service to all of you, I now share with you statements that should be edited out of a minister's resume. So therefore, no minister should include in his or her resume the following phrases. I believe empathy is overrated. In the five churches I have faithfully served over the past 2 years, my hobbies include pit bulls and automatic weapons. I am willing to sacrifice my family for the sake of the ministry. I'm also willing to sacrifice yours. I have learned to cope with financial crises in every church I've served. I require an attractive secretary and or organist. My extensive counseling of church members has proved to be a rich source of sermon illustrations. I've been told that every sermon I preach is better than the next. And finally, my personality has provided me with ample opportunity to develop conflict resolution skills. I share this amusing list with you because I want today to talk about leadership. I may be stating the obvious, but leadership, whether it's in a church or a business or some other organization, may be the most critical determination of whether that organization thrives or it falters. With the right leadership, the people associated with the organization can thrive and reach their full potential. With the wrong leadership, no matter how well-intentioned, people wither on the vine, and in some cases, they find that every aspect of their lives gets destroyed. It's hard to believe that it is now 54 years since one of the most horrendous demonstrations of leadership gone wrong took place. Deep in the jungles of Guyana in South America, hundreds of people followed their religious leader, their minister, Reverend Jim Jones, to what was supposed to be and was promised to them to be paradise on earth. When they arrived at Jonestown in Guyana, they discovered it was hardly a paradise. The buildings in the guarded compound were nothing more than corrugated tin shacks, with people crammed into bunk beds in a barrack-style accommodation. Residents of this rustic community were constantly indoctrinated by the warped egocentric theology of Reverend Jones, whose fanatical inner circle of followers enforced conformity and obedience to Jones' illogical whims by force if necessary. No one knows, but we can reasonably assume that Reverend Jones had gone mad in some way. Probably because he decided that his group was being persecuted. It was one of the reasons he left California to go to Guyana. Paranoia and persecution complexes are very common among egomaniacs and sociopaths. Jones somehow decided along the way that the only solution to avoid this perceived persecution was for everyone in the compound to commit suicide. So on Jones's order, huge jugs of powdered fruit drink were prepared in what and included massive doses of poison to be drank by his followers. Now, I should point out to you that even though people call it Kool-Aid, it wasn't actually Kool-Aid. It was, in actual fact, another brand of powdered drink that was found in Guyana. And so at gunpoint, men, women, and children were forced to come before Jones and drink their share of this unholy communion drink of fruit punch, thus dying of poison. In the horror of these events, medical personnel in the compound killed infants by actually shooting syringes full of poison into their mouths. And those who tried to escape were shot by sadistic guards who maintain a fanatical loyalty to Jones. In the end, only a handful of people actually survived this incident. And the incident is so ingrained in our collective conscience, we now have an idiom. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Meaning, don't believe the party line or what your leaders are telling you. This was a terrible chapter in religious circles. It's also clearly a cautionary tale that raises questions about how a church that began under such positive circumstances with a leader that was so revered could go so wrong. Among all the conclusions we can take from the Jonestown massacre is the truth that you can always identify who are truly godly leaders. Because godly leaders, unlike Jim Jones, always seek the best for those that they lead. When those who are being led no longer thrive, then clearly God no longer honors or blesses that leadership. This is the very heart of the passage I read for you from Ezekiel. It's a wonderful, wonderful passage. Very familiar, isn't it? In the familiar and comforting language of shepherding, Ezekiel pronounces God's judgment on Israel's leadership. Chapter 34 is a litany of leadership failures, describing in metaphorical terms of a shepherd caring for their sheep. Ezekiel speaks of the selfishness of the leaders who feed themselves before their sheep. You drink their milk, you wear their wool, and butcher the best animals, but you let the flock starve. In other words, the peasant class of Israel was being exploited. They have worked hard, they have been taxed excessively, they have been used up for the personal gain of the elite. The needy in that society who were sick and broken or lost were completely ignored. And when attention was given to the sheep, it was often given with inexcusable force and cruelty. So much stress was placed on the people that Ezekiel points out that many people just simply left the country. They fled. They became refugees. And no one from Israel went out to find them. In other words, no one really cared if they even existed. In this lost state, the abandoned sheep were at the mercy of wild animals, Ezekiel says, meaning they were at the mercy of people and powers that did not respect God. Ezekiel states that God will judge that leadership harshly. Those leaders who abuse their authority and privilege will be removed, and in a surprising move, Ezekiel says, God himself will take their place. And unlike the current leadership, God will judge and manage the flock for the betterment of the sheep. And so the sheep and the goats will be separated as the gospel lesson that's normally read on this Sunday from Matthew 25 indicates. Those sheep which have trampled the pastures of others or fouled the drinking water will be separated out. Those sheep that have gotten fat while others have starved will be judged. And God will gather in the sick, the scrawny, the poor, the lost, and the abused sheep. These words of God through the prophet Ezekiel are an indictment, not only of exploitive political systems, but of all systems that steal the vitality and the hope of people. And that goes for prime ministers and CEOs and managers, coaches, ministers, or anyone in a position of authority. One of the questions that comes to mind on this whole subject is, how did these shepherds become so harmful to the sheep in which whose care was entrusted to them? The one word that keeps coming to my mind to describe what was happening is empathy, or actually the lack of empathy. We often confuse empathy with sympathy. Sympathy is when we feel sad for someone, such as we feel sympathy for someone who's lost a loved one. Now, sympathy can be a lovely thing. It's expected at funerals, but it really carries no healing power at all. Empathy, on the other hand, is truly knowing or trying to learn what it is like for the other person in their experience. In other words, we say we are trying to walk in another's shoes. Empathy involves understanding another person's heart and spirit, and heart and spirit, including their motives, their backgrounds, and their feelings. The more empathy we have for others, the more we do come to appreciate and reverence who they are as people. For to touch the inner feelings and souls of another human being is to walk on holy ground. To gain empathy for another person, we must listen to them with our eyes, our hearts, and our ears. However, most people do not practice empathy in trying to understand someone, but rather concentrate and listen with regard to what will be their response. Those who are not empathetic are busy filtering everything through their own perspective rather than trying to understand the other person's frame of reference. Empathy is what is implied by Jesus' command to love our neighbors as ourselves. To truly love our neighbors, we have to understand and appreciate and even internalize their experience. In Ezekiel's prophecy, the leaders had no empathy for those they led. They cared not one whit for the living conditions of the sheep. They set a terrible example because we read that the same lack of empathy also existed within the sheep themselves. As they trampled over each other to get the best food and spoiled the badly needed resources that everyone had to have. It may seem harsh to say, but they just didn't care anymore. But it seems that they truly didn't. Perhaps they pronounced promises to fix systematic problems, but in the end, they were just simply empty words. Words used to placate the anger of the populace, but offering really no relief at all to their suffering. In his best-selling biography, Huey Long, the historian T. Henry Williams tells about the first time Huey Long campaigned in rural, predominantly Catholic, southern Louisiana. A veteran local advisor told Long at the outset of the tour, "Now remember one thing, Huey. Southern Louisiana is a lot different than the northern part of the state. We've got a lot of Catholic voters down here." "I know," Long said. And so at every whistle stop on the tour, Huey Long would start with these words. "When I was a boy, I'd get up at 6 a.m. every Sunday, hitch our old horse up to the buggy, and take my Catholic grandparents to Mass. I'd bring them home and then take my Baptist grandparents to church." The audiences responded warmly to these words. And the advisor finally said to Huey, "You've been holding out to us. Why didn't we know that you had Catholic grandparents?" "Don't be a fool," said Huey. "We didn't even have a horse." Huey Long may have been politically astute, but he was far from being a great leader. All he cared about was getting elected, not making life better for those that he was called to serve. All this thinking on leadership simply underscores the critical truth that good, godly leadership is critical to our vitality as people. But finding such leadership can be a tremendous challenge, as our own experience can attest. God has foreseen our hunger for leadership that's not only empathetic, but could also bring hope to we sheep that are intimately associated with in our lives grief and sorrow and being lost. God said through Ezekiel that he himself would take over the shepherding of the sheep. How do you think this shepherding by God of his sheep was to be accomplished? Perhaps you already know the answer to that question, because it's found in verse 23. And I will set one shepherd over them, even my own servant David. He will feed them and be a shepherd to them. Do you have any idea who that shepherd is? John 10, the identity of the promised shepherd of God is finally revealed to us. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. As the good shepherd, Jesus empathizes with his sheep. He seeks life for his sheep and life in great abundance. This is wonderful news for those who have been shepherded or led by people who have failed us. This is wonderful news for those who are confused about the conflicting messages that our leaders are giving us. And this is wonderful news for any of us who have been beaten up by life and then ignored by the very people we believe should be there to care for us. Jesus is the good shepherd because he truly is empathetic to our needs and our burdens. If you have any doubt as to how Jesus has been identified with his sheep, then I want to remind you of these powerful words from another prophet, Isaiah in chapter 53, beginning at verse 1. Who has believed what we have heard, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he grew up before him like a young plant, and like a root out of dry ground. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by others, a man of suffering and acquainted with infirmity. And as one from whom others hide their faces, he was despised, and we held him of no account. Surely he has borne our infirmities and carried our diseases, yet we accounted him stricken, struck down by God and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the punishment that made us whole, and by his bruises we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have all turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. Like a lamb that was led to the slaughter, like a sheep that before its shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. By a perversion of justice he was taken away. Who could have imagined his future? For he was cut off from the land of the living, stricken for the transgressions of my people. They made his grave with the wicked and his tomb with the rich, although he had done no violence, and there was no deceit in his mouth. Yet it was the will of the Lord to crush him with pain. When you make his life an offering for sin, he shall see his offspring and shall prolong his day. Through him the will of the Lord shall prosper. Out of his anguish he shall see the light. He shall find satisfaction through his knowledge. The righteous one, my servant, shall make many righteous, and he shall bear their iniquities. Therefore I will allot to him a portion with the great, and he shall divide the spoil with the strong, because he poured out himself to death, and he was numbered with the transgressors. Yet he bore the sin of many, and made intercession for the transgressors. So I ask you today, who are you following? Who is determining the value and the purpose of your life? Who is the king of your soul? Let me once again urge you all to make it Jesus.